Comrades, you are listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This show is Good Morning Comrade. You can listen to us every day, every Tuesday. You could listen to us every day if you download us on demand, but we air live on the radio on WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3 at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays. We also are available on whivfm.org/listen. Get more information, goodmorningcomrade.com. Today in the studio, we have Robert.
Hi.
And we also have a returning champion, Jake.
Hello.
So what's going on, folks? We had quite a week, didn't we? Petey's also here. We're back in the home studio.
He knows when the show starts.
He knows exactly when to start barking.
Yep.
Yeah. But what's going on, y'all?
Terrible. Like, I'm glad Aaron couldn't make it because of work.
You're glad she couldn't make it?
Yeah, because I'm feeling pretty dark.
Like, I'm been anxious like nonstop for that question.
I'm also glad it's the Tuesday show, so I can't use profanity. Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm feeling really dark. Like, we were kind of joking around earlier on Twitter about the preppers won, and I'm like, but
the preppers were right.
But I'm going to Costco this weekend, dog.
Like, give me some stuff while you're there.
I'm not even joking with you. Like. Mm-hmm.
Can't
like,
good.
We're gonna
get some water. Broadcasting from you live from the Good Morning Comrade bunker, surrounded by.
My dude, honestly, like,
canned goods.
Yeah.
It's like I want to be prepared to have like a month's worth of food or water, mm-hmm. because it's not even like I'm 39. My wife is a significantly younger age, so she even has a stronger immune system.
Significantly younger.
Yeah, I'm trying to be diplomatic. I'm trying to get out there. But it's like, I told her today, I was like, you know, everybody who's listening to this, if you're listening to the radio show, obviously you know, but if you're listening to the podcast, like, we live in New Orleans. And I was like, I told her today, I was like, we need to go to Costco and like, for real, like, get a month's worth of stuff together, because I don't want to freak you out, but like, I'm not even worried about us getting sick from the coronavirus. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was like, I'm worried about what happens when people stop going to work.
Yeah.
I'm worried about what happens when trucks stop rolling.
No, it's already happening.
Yeah.
Like, the boats are stopping moving all over the place. We have, like, all these, like, missed schedules.
Haven't they just started, like, didn't they just lock down Italy? Like, the entire Italy?
Yeah, I mean, the governments of these places are I don't want to say overreacting, but they're reacting pretty strongly to this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's causing, the economic effects of this are going to be nuts. Like, it's already messed up so much in terms of, like, shipping.
And I told her, I was like, try not to get anxious about it, because she hates when I talk like this.
Yeah.
Because she's just like, whoa. Because she'll get down even more than I do. Like, I have kind of like a gallows humor, like, we're like, oh, well, I say right now, like, I'm sure we'll get into talk about the horse race. I'm like, oh, we live in Louisiana, so okay, 11 years left to deal with climate change. If Biden or Trump wins, that's 4 more years of doing nothing. So pretty much our home's going to be underwater.
Right.
Like, so if Bernie doesn't win, we're going to be climate refugees.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I don't want to talk about that. And I'm like, yeah, because it just bumps her out. And I'm like, yeah. I know, but I told her, I was like, hey, about this whole coronavirus thing. Going back to that, I was like, let's just think about it as hurricane prep, because mm-hmm. it's almost hurricane season anyway. Yeah. Don't even think about it as coronavirus. Let's just get our hurricane
it's
supplies.
It's the next thing, yeah. It's just a catastrophe.
Yeah, let's just get our hurricane stuff now and then be done with it. But I'm really getting concerned. Like, I'm really, really freaked out right now. So there you go. That's what's on my mind right now. There's a bunch of other stuff, but. Like I said, I'm glad that certain people aren't here, so they don't have to hear me get so bummed out.
Yeah, I was my company, the office is sort of on The problem is my office, everyone, literally everyone in that office is sick, like, all the time. They all have kids.
Oh, boy.
They all, like, they take, like, one sick day, and then they still come in because, like, you know, they're not done being sick. They're just, you know, this is my one sick day I'm going to use.
Right.
You know,
might as well.
Right, like, we get 6 days through, six days.
A year?
A year, yeah.
That is nothing.
And, yeah, so like, it's March, so nobody wants to, like, go more than, like, two or three. I've already used, like, five.
Right? I know, yeah.
So, but yeah, like, it's we're all talking about, like, doing everything remotely, and we have everything, like, set up to do it. It's gonna be a weird shift, but, like, I don't know. It's one of those things where I feel like a lot of the people in the office are not sure quite how seriously to take this just yet, so... But it's coming.
I would just say that's the thing. Again, like, you know, protect your kids, protect the old folks. Mm-hmm. But I just don't. If you've lived here in New Orleans, you know what it's like in a societal break. If you lived through Katrina,
yeah,
you know what that looks like. I wasn't here for that, mm-hmm. but I've read all the books, I've seen the films, like blah blah. But people
prepared for the city to be completely shut down.
Yeah. So it doesn't. Again, not concerned about being sick. You have to be concerned about, like, if people... That's the world we live in. If people in California are sick and trucks of produce aren't rolling to Winn-Dixie here in Louisiana, we're screwed, gents. Like, nobody's here. You know, R.I.P. What are you going to do?
Yeah, we're all going to be eating crawfish, and that's, like, it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sweet potatoes, I guess. We have, like, New Orleans sweet potato crop. I mean, Louisiana sweet potato crop, but...
A lot of kale.
A lot of seafood coming, I suppose. But there was a something that was pretty cool that was connected to this. In light of the coronavirus spread and then the contact that's been made in the United States, there has been a joint call by UniteATRE, the union that represents a lot of service employees and the hotel workers, restaurant workers. They're the Culinary Union in Las Vegas. They're a local of UniteATRE. They, and in partnership with American Federation of Teachers, have called for paid sick leave for people, especially during this coronavirus time. Everybody should have paid sick leave anyway, because mm-hmm. nobody should have to go to work while they're sick, because when you go to work sick, that's how you spread diseases, especially if you work in these kinds of jobs, like service workers, hotels, waiting tables, things like that. But, I mean, especially in light of this coronavirus disaster, and we need to make sure that workers have the ability to not spread those diseases, much less with not have to work while they're feeling terrible. I'm a teacher, and schools are a petri dish, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody gets sick all the time because kids don't wash their hands, and they you know, are coughing and sneezing everywhere. They don't cover their mouth. You know, mm-hmm. that's one of those sorts of things we need to make sure that we're on top of, so that these things don't get out of control.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, that's one of the things that's ironic about this whole buzz coronavirus and, you know, any catastrophe, any kind of disaster, like, thing that hits the United States is that as soon as it happens, like, people call for all these, they call for all these implementations of socialist programs and socialist ideas that we could just have year-round. We could just totally do.
Yeah, all these, like, city governments are just saying, like, oh, yeah, we're going to make the vaccines free, you know. And it's just like, well, you could have done that at any point.
Mm-hmm. At any point, we could just have Medicare for all and never have to worry about this again.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that I think that's the terrifying thing about neoliberalism and how it props up capitalism is that it does so much well, it does so much better than any other governmental system that we've ever encountered throughout history, is that it has no shame to, like, use to collectivize and use honestly socialism to kick its own figurative can down the road further. Yeah. So anytime, so the coronavirus hits, let's collectivize, let's do free this, let's do sick days, let's do that. As soon as the crisis is over, stop all that.
Yeah.
Oh,
or it's only for that.
That's what I'm saying.
It doesn't change, it doesn't expand.
Right?
It just sticks,
like,
it with the specific carve out of the crisis, right. And it just doesn't ever roll it back either. Because we are not, like, even when we do get universal programs or whatever, like, if we had universal whatever for coronavirus, that would remain. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't go back, but it would only stay for that specific condition or the specific thing.
You have to prove your insurance. Oh, they already do, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, an insurance company gets somebody in the email. It's like, as long as you can demonstrate that it's, like, a specifically necessary, according to the CDC, test for coronavirus, then we'll cover it. So you got to actually fight with your insurance about it. It's like, oh, well, cool. It's great. Yeah. You're waiving the costs here.
I mean, it's not just the coronavirus. It's every single thing. Oh, stonks are down?
Yeah.
Cool. Let's bail out Wall Street with public money.
We're absolutely going to do that.
There's a huge natural disaster.
Yeah.
Let's just open the public coffers and just get and give out money.
FEMA, baby.
Yeah, and it's like, we could just do that. It goes back to my dumb Disney thing, like what I said a couple weeks ago when our honeymoon to Disney World, and it's like, we got high-speed rail, we got public transportation everywhere you want to go. It's like, the stuff is, like, sustainably grown. I'm like, this doesn't have to be a fantasy place where you pay $150 a ticket.
Exactly.
We need to do this every day in America.
Yeah.
This is what we could just do.
How could we possibly do that, Jake? How could we find the money for that kind of a thing? I wonder.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, these kind of events demonstrate that the way the government is funded is not the way that we are usually told it's funded. Like, we can spend unlimited amounts of money on this because we never actually needed to, like, tax money before we could actually spend it. Like, the...
cats.
No, so I guess I'm not sure how to segue this exactly. I guess the basis is that money is created not as like it's created at the point the government decides to spend money on things. Like, it does not spend money, it doesn't have like a bank account where there's like a certain set amount of money. Government just says, okay, hey, now you have this money, it now exists. It's actually the same way that the banks do it. In fact, banks have a special license, essentially, from the government to be able to do that sort of thing. Like,
yeah, they don't need permission. They just need to report it, right?
Well, let me tell you.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, it needs to be documented.
I was a low-level bank employee.
Yeah.
And that's why I learned about fractional reserve, because
mm-hmm.
the idea of, like, oh, you're overdraft on your account, let me just create money out of nothing.
Yeah.
And just wave your feet.
It's,
yeah, that ain't working. That's the way you do it.
Yeah,
right. It's
literally creating out nothing.
Because like we're always told that like banks are lending out money that somebody is like putting into the bank, but it's not actually true. What happens is the bank just creates money and then accepts your agreement to pay it later. That's it. Like the money is just created. It's all numbers and computers these days. Honestly, like there's no printing involved.
It's one big spreadsheet.
Yeah. So yeah, like when we have these disasters, the government can absolutely afford to put as much money as it needs to. So this is where it gets kind of complicated. The measure, as long as there's actually like you can't buy stuff that doesn't exist in your country. Essentially, like you can.
You have to import it.
Yeah. Well, so, and then you have to trade it with, like, another country.
Mm-hmm.
They have to accept your currency, and that's where it starts getting kind of complicated,
mm-hmm.
but, like, and so a lot of the problems where hyperinflation things come into is because smaller countries do not have those resources, and they need to buy them from a larger country, and the larger country will only take its own currency to do it,
mm-hmm.
And then they start loaning money in that currency.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't trade their own currency with it. They try to make more of their own currency, but it becomes less valuable
right.
because it's being measured against the currency to which they owe.
Right. The international
exchange.
Isn't
that why I've always heard that, like,
yeah.
I've heard from people who are smarter than me that, like, the idea of worrying about the national debt, worrying about the national debt or balancing our budget is a scam.
Yeah.
Like,
it is 100% a scam. Because, like, the national debt is just a measure of how many bonds people buy. And a bond is basically just you get some free money from the government for having a savings account with them for a while. Like, we don't need to be doing bonds at all. Like, we can just hand out money.
So, can you just describe what a bond is really quick?
Go ahead, yeah. I've got a question.
Yeah.
What's a bond?
Oh, sorry. So a bond is when you save money with the government. You buy an agreement from the government to give you back a certain amount of money.
So you're lending the government money.
Yeah.
And you usually get lower of a return on your investment because it's such a safe place to put your money, correct?
That's the general idea, yeah. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's a savings account, essentially, with a debtor who cannot default. Like,
right.
The government will never...
Definitionally
say,
speaking,
yeah,
on
they
terms of the way
say,
the currency works.
We can't pay this bond because there's no logical reason for them to do that. It would be basically committing suicide. Right?
And the reason for that is because, again, the bonds are owed, the debt is taken out,
yeah.
And paid both in U.S. dollars,
mm-hmm.
and who is the sole producer?
Yeah.
It's literally a monopoly of what is the, you know, way that currency gets created is the U.S. government. So it can never default on that debt because they can make infinite dollars.
Yeah.
That's sort of like the basics of monetary theory.
So my retort to that, though, is, and I'm saying this is like, this is not a, not I said retort, like, this
let's
is not
push the conversation forward.
This is not going to be a rhetorical question. I really don't know the answer.
Uh-huh.
So on one side, I hear economists, like leftist economists, say that, I listen to a lot of, who says a lot is Sam Cedar. Mm-hmm. He's not an economist, but it'd be like, the national debt's a scam that just people, the right wing wants to talk about when they're not in power, and then when they get in power, they want to be like, oh, we don't care anything about the debt, we're going to run it up.
Yeah.
But then what is the tipping point where a country prints so much money that it's no longer has any value? Like other countries around the world don't have faith in it?
Well, so
like, what happens there? How does he get there?
That all is so all the big examples I can think of were like the Weimar Republic in Germany.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking about.
Or this sucks. I'm bad. I work for a company that does nothing but ships to African countries. I can't.
Greece?
Yeah,
what about Greece? Like Greece
Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe.
So all those examples
Greece
are
zero.
Essentially, so they owed money to other countries, and they were trying to pay that money that they owed using their own currency. But their own currency no longer, they can't buy that debt with their own currency. They have to trade their currency for another thing. So they have to convince, you know, the Weimar Republic had to convince the rest of Europe that its Reichsmarks were worth anything in order for them to be able to pay that debt. And the rest of Europe was kind of being dicks at the time. They were, like, not accepting it for very much. They had to try to sell their...
So the IMF was around, but are we talking about the IMF right now?
No.
Well, that's a later version of that same sort of thing.
I will say, though, the core question of how powerful a currency can be is a fundamentally a question of political power more than anything.
Absolutely.
Wow.
It's
okay.
And so that's why all these like island nations are constantly impoverished is because the IMF or the American I don't know. We got a bunch of these like weird little American Reserve banks.
These are international banks that are kind of coordinate. They lend to countries that are in. They lend currency in their local currency, or they lend it in.
They lend it in U.S. dollars.
U.S. dollars.
So Jamaica, if they want to buy, if they need supplies, like if there's, you know, they need bananas in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't think of an example.
No.
If they need any
commodity.
Somebody
who goes to Jamaica a lot, I can actually tell you like. The story you always get told is, because it's an island, it's so hard to export things.
No.
That's why, like, there's a weird Amazon alternative in Jamaica that you, like, you go on the website and it'll ship to you because buying on Amazon's way too expensive. That's why a lot of Jamaicans, what they will do is, because you're still, you're not subject to the British Empire, you're, like, whatever, you have that, whatever.
You're like Canada.
Yeah, so you can go to Canada, and then they'll come to the U.S., like, on a tourist visa, buy a bunch of electronics, and then go back. Not because they're trying to, like, super hustle or anything. It's just that, like, something that would cost, like, yeah, it just costs so much more to get it on the island.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's worth it to go all the way to North America.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that does also come down to, like, various trade deficits, but, It's 100%. Like, if you owe money in, like, U.S. dollars, you have to get U.S. dollars to do it. So you have to convince people.
Or an equivalent in exchange, and how that exchange is determined is...
By the U.S.
Whoever's got the, political initiative or the political power.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you like that.
No, that's absolutely it. It's essentially the backbone of neocolonialism. I mean, it's... These structures exist specifically to extract value from Jamaica as cheaply as possible.
And again, groups like the IMF, these world banks or these international banks that lend money to these nations that are impoverished or politically isolated, I mean, there's no difference between those two things.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, when they lend this money to these countries, they also what comes along with it are neoliberal reforms. They're basically mandated. So we're going to conditionally lend you this money, but in order to do that, you need to make sure you maintain a balanced budget, you make sure that you're not taxing rich corporations, and you make sure you're not providing too many government services.
No tariffs whatsoever.
Yeah, no tariffs.
That's
free trade.
That's so eye-opening to me. Like, I honestly never given any thought. It's just so you're telling me it's just another scam, it's just another banking scam that exists, because I always thought, like, oh, this is obviously backed up by something. This is obviously, like,
yeah, it's a U.S. military. Nature,
so, you know, yeah, like, but then when I sit here and I'm like, we're having it, and it just dawns on me, I'm sitting like, well, okay, the story is it's so hard to import stuff. I'm like, how hard is it to import to Jamaica? Any harder from China than it is to the U.S.? How is it any harder?
Not. The problem is they don't have, they have a really a trade deficit, essentially, so they can't export enough that's valuable enough to the people in, like, there's, like, core nations or something, to be able to, like, fund it. Like, it's a tiny island. I don't know.
And at the same time, that's why you're able to go to places and get extremely cheap labor from places like Vietnam, because those places are, well, they are isolated in a very similar way, and, you know, like, technology, computers, and things like that are very in demand. It's also an extremely international industry. China, Russia, the U.S., there basically is an agreement amongst those three to say, like, well, that's where we're going to get our stuff for cheap from.
And so on the flip side, speaking of China, so a lot of there's a lot of rhetoric out there about how China owes a lot of the debt. It's basically...
They own a lot of U.S. debt, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Basically, China has been, they have the, what's the opposite of a trade deficit?
Surplus.
Yeah, there you go. They have a fantastic trade surplus with the U.S., so they have all this extra U.S. money that they don't know what to do with, and so...
Protected by buying bonds from the U.S. government.
Yeah, absolutely. It's way safer. Well, I mean, other Chinese companies will just buy interests in, like, U.S. companies, but a lot of people, when you do, like, a smart stock mix, you just buy a little bit of everything, and, like, that way you're protected from coronavirus.
Yeah, it's collapses. Financialization. I mean, that's what it is. So it's basically investment of money to essentially compound. So you're basically getting an investment from something that is not labor. Each layer of financialization is just another layer of alienation from the core work
done. Yeah, I mean, this is just, you know, money making more money.
To be, like, Marxist about it.
No, totally. It's something, I mean, it's been going on forever, so, like, Marx would be very familiar with this sort of thing.
Right. It ain't new, folks. Yeah. It ain't new at all.
Super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, yeah, during the Weimar Republic.
Yeah, because I get the... I just see, like, the image in my head of just Germans with wheelbarrows full of Reichsmarks trying to buy a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
Like, literally, it was just because all of Europe was really pissed off at Germany.
And we said that, too! Yeah. That was the thing that... Yeah. I forget who said it. It was just like, we're leaving Germany to its fate.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're intentionally doing this. Mm-hmm. You're right. I just never thought about
that. Might have been like a Wilson, like, 14 points kind of thing. Even, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it was coordinated with the Prime Minister everybody hated. What's his name?
Was it Churchill?
It wasn't Churchill. It was the guy before Churchill, who everybody hated because he...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know who you're talking about. Yeah. Oh,
I can see him.
Gosh, why does his name escape all three of us at once?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm looking at him in my mind's eye right now.
It was, but yeah, it was, like, under his, like, initiative in France and, I think it was, like, Belgium or something at the time signed on to it. But yeah, so, like, modern money theory, you know, you can spend unlimited amounts of money. So there is still money does still have, like, some...
Neville Chamberlain.
Thank you. That's
Chamberlain, that's right.
I don't know why, because he was the appeasement guy.
He was starting to see. It was just like, anyway.
So could there ever be a scenario to where, like, the IMF and, like, the rest of the governments would, like, turn on the U.S.? Like, let's say we just said, let's say we instituted social programs and, like, we just spent unlimited amounts of money.
It's a hell of a hypothetical, but, like, the moment that the IMF would turn on the U.S. is the moment where where someone else would replace the U.S. as the person that would be politically, that would, or the nation or conglomeration of nations, be it the EU, which is, that's not likely because they're, or whatever. It could be China, it could be, you know, Russia, or whatever.
Yeah,
as soon as somebody's more powerful than the U.S., politically speaking, then they would be the one that the U.S., I mean, that the IMF or whatever, World Banks or whatever, would go over to. To the point, like, it's essentially, if they were able to be politically unseated from their sort of hegemonic state in charge of the, you know, global economy.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so I was gonna say, yeah, like, so when you, I mean, you can't actually print unlimited money. There is some relationship to how much money there is and the value of money, but
right, it dilutes.
It's still like it's what it is a percentage of the economy. It's not a percentage of the it's not a percentage of gold anymore. It's just a percentage of the overall
political power of the U.S.
Yeah, the political power of the U.S. So you could, in fact, print if you actually literally printed like $1 trillion more dollars,
mm-hmm.
it would actually have an impact. It's not a one-to-one thing. I mean, we print every year more dollars than we have inflation because the economy is growing.
Right, but it's not for working people.
Yeah.
Line go up for a very long time, but all of a sudden, over the past couple of weeks, line go way down.
Well, this is why I want to throw out, you know, to all our listeners, this is a very exclusive, very selective grift. I mean, opportunity that you can take advantage of. You just go to goodmorningcomrade.com/ let me see your gold shine, and we have all your bullion needs.
Oh yeah.
We got everything you
need.
Hey,
could... you know, it's probably still a good idea, especially.
So, we're not selling dinars? I thought we were doing dinars. Is that over with?
We got gilt, you know, for Hanukkah. We got those little gold coins with the chocolate in them.
Can we sell indulgences?
It's all good,
like a church did? I think I can start forgiving people.
I forgot to check, but I think Bitcoin is like disappointing a lot of people right now because it's not doing as good. Also because of coronavirus, it's not like having.
Why not? Bitcoin is done. Bitcoin, like, yeah. Coronavirus finally killed Bitcoin.
Because you don't have the technology to mine or trade Bitcoin. If you don't have that exchangeability.
Good, like, if you want to go down a dark road,
mm-hmm.
There's some really good compilations on YouTube where people just put together posts on 4chan where people are just like, I just lost, you know, $1 million in Bitcoin. Like, all my money's gone.
The whole thing.
So can you actually let's
I got some Dogecoin.
You got some Dogecoin?
I some Dogecoin too. People gave it to me on Reddit. Yeah.
Okay, so let's actually kick it to station ID, and then I actually do want to kind of like ground this conversation that we're having,
uh-huh.
Because I'm actually fascinated by these cryptocurrencies.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if we started this kind of conversation, we should start from square one.
Yeah, let's do.
All right, so you're listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This show is called Good Morning Comrade. We're about to talk about some Bitcoin, so please tell us, Jake, if you're you're not the Bitcoin guy, but like, can you just like explain what a cryptocurrency is, and then, like...
It's such a bad idea.
Okay. No. Like, you can do it in the dummy terms for me, because I'm really stupid. But, like, what is it? You don't need to be, like, super technical about it. Essentially, it's like a code, like a locker code, or something like that.
Yeah. So a Bitcoin is, if you're going to talk about blockchain, and if you're going to talk about Bitcoin, so the blockchain is basically a... distributed ledger, which basically just means everybody has the same spreadsheet and is constantly checked with everybody else's
mm-hmm.
spreadsheet. So if there's any changes in the spreadsheet, everybody knows.
So, like, essentially, if you were going to say, like, we're going to have every prime number or something like that
be
worth a certain amount.
So you have to make sure that, like, so using this distributed ledger
mm-hmm.
where you can see anybody making any changes, then you can know that, you know, this is legitimately a Bitcoin. It's a security measure that's actually really useful in some other industries, but not all of them, blah, blah,
right.
blah. That's a whole separate thing for blockchain.
But the point about it is that it's something that is, like, securitizable.
Yeah. It's theoretically in more secure ways, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So blockchain existing allowed the creation of Bitcoin, which is essentially you
trade those numbers around.
Yeah, you use a computer to solve an intense algorithm which validates that you have one of these coins. And the algorithm comes with the rest of the coin.
And this has gotten to the point where, like, entire data farms have been
used to come up with this algorithm. It screwed up my pastime of PC gaming.
I couldn't get a good video card for ever.
You would need a video card for that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
for
because it's all GPU.
Yeah, what happened is there were some breakthroughs in the GPU technology. So it used to be they would use CPUs. GPUs turned out to be a little bit faster, so there was a big run on them, essentially.
And these things just crunch numbers. These are just chips that crunch, like giant mega calculators.
Yeah, they guess this algorithm is quickly as possible, as many times as possible.
It's just, it just runs a bunch of scenarios, like one after like the other after the other.
TI 1080s were going for like $2,000. It was stupid.
No, they there was a total shortage of supply. They only managed to solve it because somebody else figured out a way to make CPUs run better, so GPUs are no longer as important.
They put 69 cores on their GPUs.
So the basis of the idea is so you have a secure way to say that you have a digital object. So a bunch of libertarian nerds were like, hey, let's turn this into money. It took like 4 years, and then like it took off out of nowhere as a bunch of people with money finally kind of figured out what it was. I feel like that's probably the biggest stumbling block for people, because you had to try to pitch it to these Wall Street people and you had to be like, okay, so it's, you know, it's secure.
It's like the peak level of alienation.
When
money is so far removed from any kind of labor or political power, it is like mega super extra libertarian radiant.
When you say people with money, wasn't it just like
Wall Street people?
who weren't necessarily, correct me if I'm wrong, they weren't necessarily caring about Bitcoin, but they cared about the blockchain.
The return that they would get.
They saw the other things they could do with the blockchain.
Yeah, blockchain got kind of weird. There's all sorts of like implementations of blockchain. That's what I mean. That already exist and are like in other
actually
areas.
Useful in the world.
I think the thing about the blockchain for Bitcoin was really just there was no real way to actually have a secure currency. Before this, honestly, you could encrypt it, but then you would have to, like, everybody has, okay. So, the distributed ledger means that everybody has a record of every transaction for Bitcoin, so everybody can validate that record based on their own records. So, it's an open trust kind of system where, you can determine whether or not any shenanigans have gone on.
It's ancestry.com for ones and zeros.
Yeah, absolutely, you see exactly where it's been traded.
Yeah. And honestly, I really do think it was just at some point Wall Street people finally figured out what it was, and they were like, okay, well, I guess I can invest in it. And once you get a couple of people investing it, a lot of people
it blew up.
It was a big fad.
It's basically just a technology. It's technology X.
Stocks are up.
So for I don't know, like a year and a half or something, it was like $15,000 to $20,000 for one Bitcoin. Which is nuts, because back in the early days of Bitcoin...
This was like in 2010.
It was actually...
11, 12...
When we say a Bitcoin, though, you gotta think it's like...
It was
it's like pirate currency, where they take, an actual coin and cut it into pieces of eight. It's called a Satoshi. So how many Satoshis make up a Bitcoin again? I can't remember.
I think they just go by, point percent.
Yeah, they go by percentage now,
It's real stupid, because then it's like, oh, I'm going to spend, 0.00308 on a pizza, which is, $50 bucks or some shit.
Right.
It shot up, so a lot of people bought in, and then it kind of fell apart, because people, there was a bunch of negative articles about it, and I think the real problem is that, one of the ideas is that it was supposed to be used as a currency. People were supposed to be buying and selling things with it. Nobody
never
was doing that. They were all just holding on to it, which destroys its use as a currency and makes it ruins its value.
Because and for people who are not up on this kind of stuff and who we might have lost in this conversation, one of the defining and key reasons a currency has value is because it's exchangeable.
Yeah.
Because you can just say, I have $25, let me buy that pair of headphones or whatever.
Right. The U.S. dollar has value because the U.S. government collects it back in taxes. They won't accept anything else in taxes.
Yeah.
Anything else won't work. Can't pay it in yuan or gold pesos or reals or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's at a determined exchange rate, and that exchange rate would have to take place before. Because, if you came and gave me, 2,000 yen for that pair of headphones or whatever, that's not something I'm interested in doing, because I'm not gonna have to, I'd have to go exchange in, I don't know what the exchange rate is at any given time.
Yeah, so going back to the modern monetary theory, that's the whole thing of the one of the reasons that taxing exists is to encourage people to actually use dollars for stuff.
Right.
You can also use
it's so hegemonic, by the way.
Yeah.
Intentionally speaking, but it's also not a bad thing necessarily, because it does facilitate trade.
Yeah. Yeah, because the I mean, if people didn't have like a reason to use U.S. dollars, they might use, you know, John Rockefeller's Rocket Dollars, which you can spend on your rent or something.
Well, and not to bring us off the rails here, but again, there was a point in the you know 1800s, 1900s.
Well, people, yeah, they're paying for script.
Companies would pay workers that would use the use at a company store or at a company town or whatever. And like that's like even a like degree of it wouldn't even necessarily be nationalism, but it sort of like was a replacement for a state because there weren't things like a social safety net other than like churches and stuff.
Yeah, I'd have to look into it. I feel like that may have like been about. I mean, it was definitely around the time when dollars were based on the value of gold more than anything else.
But yeah,
I think it was also probably before a lot of like real strong taxation policies. Like,
correct. That was during the era of capitalism, yeah. And also like if you think that fiat currency is like U.S. dollars as it currently exists is a fiat currency,
yeah.
You don't think like business given in dollars or script is not a fiat currency in a similar way?
Yeah, anything.
I mean, it was concurrent with feudalism at certain various, despite the fact that, and again, I'm gonna get like pedantic here, but like feudalism is a disputed phrase. It's terminologically, it's sort of like a generally applied thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not to be, like, too pedantic here, but,
But the thing that's sad about, like, the thing that's sad about the kind of Bitcoin is in the dustbin of history, along with other cryptocurrencies that people just kind of mine for fun now, is, like, it does have actual practical applications of, like, let's say that you're an activist and you don't want, you know, you don't want the government knowing where your money's being spent or where it's being received by. I look at a website like It's Going Down. When you ever start read It's Going Down?
Yeah, it's kind of an anarchist website.
Yeah, they got Patreon money and they got like funding money from donations. They just got their stuff pulled by Visa, MasterCard, all the credit card companies just said nope, flip the switch.
Right.
Said you're done.
Right, because
the cryptocurrency would be an end around to that.
Because the difference, and this is important too, like it's the way that credit card companies are able to operate is because they facilitate that trade as a middleman.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing, I suppose, that could be gleaned from the cryptocurrency is that it is like actually person to person.
Yeah.
In a very direct way. Like I can give, it's almost like me giving you $5.
Yeah.
If I put $5 in your hand, or if I sent $5 worth of bitcoins or whatever,
right.
The only difference is that it's not physically there, it's that my computer can send that file to your computer that says that that's a very specific amount.
Yeah, I mean,
they can't copy it.
The reason I think all these credit card companies are so, and like PayPal and such, are so shy on this stuff is because they're terrified of being legally culpable for crimes, essentially.
Right.
So back in the day, you know, that was the whole point of having cash, is that you could pay people for crimes in cash, and you didn't have to worry about it.
It's not traceable. Bitcoins are traceable, though.
Or
you can trace who they go to, but you don't trace necessarily what they're for.
Yeah, well, the wallets are anonymized, so you don't necessarily know who's getting the wallet at the end of the day.
Now, can you define what a wallet is really quick?
That's just the your portion of the distributed ledger that keeps track of how many bitcoins you have.
Your spreadsheet decoder.
Yeah. It's assigned to your bunch of numbers, username, and your password.
Like an IP or something.
Yeah. You sign up for an account with the real fascinating thing about Bitcoin is there were actually a lot of problems with doing the implementation of this. So there were a lot of in-runs around the problems of doing the implementation of this, which were really dangerous because essentially, a lot of miners started figuring out that it would be more profitable for them to mine together and, like, form these botnets or, like, join a larger collective of mines. And then
they're becoming corporations and federations
just,
of corporations
it's just
and partnerships.
Real life evil
and, yeah.
And they would pay that to everybody. But then, so there was a big scare for that though, because some of these got large enough where if they eventually owned 51% of the network, then they could make changes to the distributed ledger. And have their changes.
That's a corporation.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. Nobody could contest their changes. And all that really was just because the problem of having a wallet it was actually a little hard to solve.
How do you get one to everybody, and how can you get it so that people that every single person has the technology to maintain that wallet?
Yeah.
And it never really had. You don't really have like a wallet app in the same way. You would need to have an actual computer.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I don't know.
I just remember when we hit peak foolishness.
The exchangeability problem is the biggest problem.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Go ahead. I just remember when we hit peak foolishness. I think I even took a picture of it. That the Brown Derby convenience store on Canal.
Oh, yeah. They had a Bitcoin thing.
They did. They had a Bitcoin ATM sign. Yeah. Right. You can, like, yeah, you could.
Didn't they have, like, Bitcoin gift cards for a bit? Like, you could buy, like, a certain, like, Bitcoins and put them on a gift card, just like you're buying, like, trading cards, like Magic the Gathering cards or something.
Speaking of Magic the Gathering, that was, like, the beginning. If you held any Bitcoin at the Mt. Gox, the Mt. Gox scandal.
Yeah, I remember that.
Mt. Gox was, MTG. It used to be a card trading site.
It used to be Magic the Gathering trading
card. Right, so Bitcoin. All right, so I don't want to get too, like
this is great. This is taking my mind off the election.
So let's talk about Mt. Gox, because this is something that happened in, like, 2015, if I'm not mistaken. What is Mt. Gox? What is the scandal? What happened here?
Oh, I don't remember exactly.
Well, so I'm just talking off my own memory, so I could be completely wrong. But it was a Magic the Gathering, like, card trading site based in Japan, and they were holding, like, look it up. They were, but then they started, like, holding people's Bitcoin there like a bank, like an actual bank. And then governments were like, hey, you're operating as a bank over here. And they just said, no, we're not, because we're closed, and all Bitcoin's gone. Bye! All gone.
I kind of appreciate the grift. I can't lie. I'm not going to lie.
They just stole everybody's Bitcoin, then. It was it. Oh, wait.
And so this is one of the dangers of having it anonymized, is because, like, you can tell that maybe that they're selling your Bitcoin, but you still can't tell who the hell had it in the first place.
Yeah. So like, instead of thinking of a wallet as, like, an actual wallet, think of it as, like, a mattress, and you're just packing 20s in there.
Yeah.
It was a South Park meme, and it's gone.
I remember that.
They just threw it in there, and they just took off. They closed up shop, and it was a white van speaker scam, but with cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
The blockchain. It was bad.
It's going to be interesting, because, like, cryptocurrency it's not dead. Like, there's a bunch of supposedly better ones, Litecoin, Ethereum. Ethereum's still going.
Really?
Yeah.
Is Dogecoin still worth anything?
Maybe. I mean, it was...
They are adorable.
I've got, like, a fourth of
them. Dogecoin got up to be, like, the second most valuable coin, like, for...
Yeah, for a minute.
A bit, yeah.
You didn't cash out, bud.
Yeah, I still got it. It's like a fourth of a coin.
You got, like, $8.
Woo!
And that was just because it was, like, the second one that was created. It was actually created as an intentional parody of Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's the joke. It was a joke. So, which is, like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Man, does anybody even listening remember the Doge memes?
Yeah,
all day.
I remember I was in college for that.
They brought them back for, like, a weird revival now where they're, like, they're all weird and depressed. It's so strange. Memes are weird, man.
Very strange. Yeah, money. Stocks are down today.
Yeah, line go down. Coronavirus make line go down. Yeah. Oil go way down.
Tell me why I should, like, care. Like, seriously, tell me why I shouldn't just be rooting for the stock market to collapse. Because a lot of people have their money in pensions that are invested.
I mean, my retirement is not happy about this.
It shouldn't be in there in the first place, but...
Well, I mean, I have a teacher retirement that
I know,
is, like,
but I mean, like, it's not your fault. Well, you didn't do it. I'm just saying that, like, maybe they shouldn't be taking people's retirement money and putting them in a casino. Because
you're just supposed to get a fucking pension, goddamn.
Monetary man...
You're the money man.
Here's my. Tell me why I'm wrong. 100%. I need to tell me why I'm wrong, because I play poker. Mm-hmm. He's a pin. Grandma pin. So I play poker. I've dabbled in stocks before. I have a small portfolio, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't look at it as any different than a poker game. Mm-hmm. It's another casino. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. When I worked for Citibank, I was, like, super into day trading. Before I quit, they were going to train you to day trade.
You worked for the best one, buddy.
Yeah, and I was just like, okay, so this is just gambling.
You couldn't get a job at Bank of America?
But I was like, tell me. And I've had this argument with people where people think, like, the stock market, they think Wall Street is, like, holy. They think it's some kind of, like, backbone of American society. I'm like, no, this is a casino for ultra-rich people that don't know how to play Baccarat.
It doesn't even have cool lights or, like, the dancing people Penn and Teller aren't at Wall Street. You know, you don't have Siegfried and Roy.
Don't they invite like famous guests sometimes that
yeah,
hit the closing?
Yeah, all they do is like hit a hammer. It's pretty lame.
But today, like, they had to stop trading because the stocks were in such a free fall. It hit one of the what's called a circuit breaker.
Mm-hmm. All right, I don't know
how many circuit breakers are hit today, but mm-hmm. like there's three of them. There's one 15-minute. And then if they keep dropping, there's a 30-minute one where no trades can happen. And if it keeps dropping again, they just stop trading. Mm-hmm. They just take their ball and go home.
I mean, you're absolutely right. It is gambling, and like that's the problem is that there are definitely people who are living so close to the edge that this kind of free fall would in fact cause them to go bust. They'll freak out. They'll lose all their money.
Like in 2008.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's tough to. I mean, the later economic effects are all going to come like somewhat after the actual crash. But it's just going to mean that like banks will freak out and they'll stop paying out credit.
Make your point.
No, I was going to say that like in the close out, and I want to be told like why I'm wrong about this, mm-hmm. but it's like this is the way I look at the stock market. So let's say we all have a company, right? Mm-hmm. We got a company and we make beer koozies. Mm-hmm. And then we put this company public. Now, our thing with the company is we want to be making beer koozies so our kids can live off the beer koozie money and take over the business and then their grandkids. And we want to have longevity.
Yeah.
But now we've made this beer koozie company publicly traded. Mm-hmm. So now we've invited a bunch of people in who only care. They don't care about the company's longevity.
No,
they only care about it in the short term.
It's
where
a layer
they peak
of it.
At,
yeah.
Then they can get out.
Yeah.
So
it's a layer of alienation from the work.
They have no investment in our company.
Other than financial,
and their whole scheme is to get in, and get out.
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter if it's 20 years from now, or 20 minutes, or a half a millisecond on a day trade.
Yeah.
You know, so. That's their whole thing.
It could be a computer that's making that trade automatically.
That's what I'm saying. So we, as company, as CEOs of this company, we are now beholden to a group of people who don't care anything at all about the longevity of this company.
Absolutely.
That seems absolutely insane to me, and why the stock market shouldn't exist.
That is the cornerstone of our society, my man.
Yeah, exactly. Hey,
I mean, tell me why I'm wrong. Like, I want to know. Like, no, that's crazy, bro. Grow up. You don't understand how things work.
Absolutely. No, it's fascinating to see like the development of society towards like, I mean, we used to just have like a really rich person who would go ahead and have a company. And I think that made sense to people in a certain like feudalist way where it's like, yeah, you know, the Walton family owns, you know, Walmart, and that's their due. They're the lords of Walmart and stuff. As it slowly moved down towards like having basically anybody with like $1 million being able to like show up and like dump your company real quickly, and like all those I'm trying to remember the name of them, the actual corporations that do that, like the folks that
not venture capitalists, but like Bain Capital. What does Bain Capital do? What are they? That's exactly what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
yeah. They just buy up a company, sell off all the assets,
yeah.
and then sell the whole company.
And they'll tell you a lie about how they're going to save the company and turn it around.
Exactly.
They never, ever, ever do.
Yeah. It's the folks who bought, they bought Toys R Us.
Toys R Us. That's Bain.
Yeah.
That's Mitt Romney. What is it called? It's not venture capitalist. Capital, obviously. It's not angel investor, obviously. It's, I can't remember. I can look it up later. But go ahead.
No way. They killed the Gizmodo. Trying other examples. Anyway, like yeah, now that we've gotten to a point where like people have like are they're not playing nice. I feel like so this is something I think about all the time. Like I feel like a lot of the decent things in society are based on people like all kind of agreeing to be nice and like not following. Like we don't build really strong rules that force them to be nice. It's just like people don't want to like they want to be able to go home and go to sleep at night and feel okay. And so we built a society where people can just take advantage of that, and it's slowly gotten worse and worse and worse, and it's going to continue getting worse because it makes sense. They're financially incentivized to do so, to not be nice, and all you have to do is just kind of like kill the part of yourself inside that actually wants to have a company that can like support people, and then you can just be like, yeah, I'm going to buy your company, sell off all the assets, and walk away with a couple extra $1 million.
Yep.
I don't know.
It just seems like an insane way to run an economy.
Yeah, I always think about this, because so I'm an anarchist. I constantly entertain these ideas with my deepest and, like, truest healthy belief is that like we should just destroy everything. But like I wonder if there could in fact be a reform to capitalism if we actually created and enforced the rules that force these sort of things to actually work out. Like, could we force people to be like benevolent feudal lords? Like, I don't know.
I don't think that could happen, because you put people, like you said, any kind of lordship, like you said, benevolent feudal lords. I don't think those things, those are contradictions in themselves.
Well, okay.
But I think a system can...
Like Rockefeller's libraries.
I think a capitalism could exist to where I grow my crops in my backyard garden, and I sell them at the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
But after I reach a certain threshold where I have such an impact on the economy, all of a sudden that puts me into social democratic territory, at least, at a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have a... Instead of investors, if I'm Ford Motor Company,
mm-hmm.
and there's Ford, and let's say there's five manufacturers of cars, or whatever, I'm just pulling this out of my butt.
Yeah.
But let's say you have something like that, where it's like not a lot of companies manufacturing the same thing, and they become essential to the economy. After you've reached that threshold,
mm-hmm.
you can't get publicly invested in anymore.
Yeah.
The government now invests, and that's who you're beholden to.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I don't know.
I think the point at which you're not actually doing the labor that produces the value, but you're instead fudging the numbers, wherein you're creating, I guess you're not doing labor to create value,
mm-hmm.
but you're artificially inflating value. That's sort of like the definition of what an executive is to me,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's the point where, upon at least from my vulgar perspective, if you're in a worker state, obviously workers would be able to control that. But if you're in a capitalist state, capitalists can encourage that.
So that seems like more of a syndicalist kind of perspective. Yeah, honestly, too, it's a little bit of a moot argument too, because the idea of creating good, strong, forceful rules that would actually force good conduct can never happen so long as the people with all the power are the people who don't want to do the good conduct. Like, I mean, that's mm-hmm. a problem. Yeah.
If you live in a capitalist state, you get capitalist governance. If you live in a worker state, you live in worker state. It's literally that simple.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to who has the money.
And who has the ability to get what done. I mean, it's not simply like one or the other, because mm-hmm. obviously even in a capitalist state, labor has a power. And
yeah.
even in a, you know, like socialist or communist or whatever, anarchist state, there would be groups of people that are able to... you know, operate in a block,
yeah.
and pool resources in whichever way they exist in that society that will, you know, overpower, you know, the other groups. Unless you have something that's entirely consensus based,
yeah.
Like if you have an entirely that does not seem function. That's like a libertarian paradise, right?
Mm-hmm.
A consensus based society.
Yeah, I just
because nobody can do anything.
Agreed. Like that's my main. My main argument against libertarianism is exactly, I think we're talking about the same thing, is that I'm very cynical, like you said,
libertarian in a sense, I don't mean to interrupt, but they're able to remove themselves from the society in a certain sense, right?
I guess, but the thing is, my main argument with libertarians is, they think that somehow people are going to act benevolently, and I'm I completely
God
disagree
King type stuff.
With any of that. Like, people won't do it with the rules. Why without restrictions are all of a sudden companies not going to pollute and poison water supplies? Like, why would they do that? What incentive did they have to do that? That's why we've had this talk before. A lot of my arguments for socialism don't come from I don't even try to start with, this will benefit the most people.
Right.
Because I just don't think people are just crap. This is me just being a doomer. Like, I don't. We're crabs in a bucket, and people will just constantly try to pull each other down. So it's like one of my arguments is like, well, why should people get paid? When somebody goes, I don't understand if people work at Walmart, why they think they deserve $15 an hour? Well, my argument to that is, do you hold stock in Walmart? And they go, well, no. And I go, oh, but you do. Let me explain to you how the government has to subsidize people's living conditions because a multi-billion dollar corporation will not pay those people a living wage. So we have to subsidize social programs because Walmart refuses to pay people. Mm-hmm. It affects you. It's the taxpayer.
It's tough talking about like modern monetary theory too, because like so much it's a radical theory in like economic circles, except that in governance, like, they do it all the time, specifically right. Handing them out to corporations.
Right. Or to fund wars.
They
have modern monetary theory that already exists in the U.S. It's just, it's not for
Trump just gave working, a ton of money to farmers.
It's a fundamentally, this is what I was saying earlier, and I don't mean to, like, mm-hmm. you know, repeat myself necessarily, but in a capitalist state, you will get capitalist governance.
Yeah.
Right? And the objective in a capitalist state is to subjugate labor and maximize profit. Mm. So the idea that like the U.S. Post-recession has insanely high, you know, stock trading values and, you know, the stock market's at its highest record or was at its highest records at whatever,
yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily pay off for working people. Well, of course that's the case because right. that a society is structured such that mm-hmm. that is not something that is necessary or even like considered to be a priority.
How funny is it too? Because I always hear, oh, the stock market's doing great, Trump's economy is great, like blah 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 blah. Is that so? I've been hearing this, but now today when the stock market's in free fall. I'm literally on Fortune, I'm literally .com, I'm literally on like the Fast Company, because I want to see what they say. And the first thing they say, oh, the stock market's not the economy. Oh, the stock market's crashing?
Yeah,
this is why you should do...
The fundamentals of the economy are good.
This is why you should do nothing.
Last word, Jake, we have to get out of here, we can do a post-show, but go ahead with what you got.
Oh, shit.
What he was saying.
I'm really bad at last words on things. This dog just hopped on me. The stock market could absolutely go away. When it comes down to it, like the labor value is the only real value that's in the world.
Commodity value, labor value.
Yeah, it's gonna have a lot of negative effects because we've built so much of our society on like debits and credits, and like there are legitimately a lot of people who are depending on like these tiny like bets to pay off.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, too, like the coronavirus in general, like there are a lot of people out there who are living paycheck to paycheck, mm-hmm. and are now gonna be forced to go home. Or like go without pay, and it's gonna be a lot of shit. But the stock market itself, that thing, yeah, holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Cool. You can listen to a Good Morning Comrade on WHIV LP New Orleans, 102.3. Jake, can you say for a Thursday show?
Thursday.
But for today, I'm gonna do another show.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So we just record one right after this. You can listen on Thursday. You can check that out on goodmorningcomrade.com. You can get all of our social media, get more information about that. Goodmorningcomrade.com, at Comrade Morning on Twitter, and facebook.com/goodmorningcomrade, and Instagram.
Goldgrift.com.
Yeah, just...
magic cards.
We'll inflate the value of your investments. Anyway, love you, bye.